All right, my dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you for joining us here in the second hour on our members' website. And we are talking with Suzanne Posel, and we're going to continue our conversation. We've been talking about, of course, the foreclosures and the debacle with the financial scandals and everything else, tying that together. And we're going to kind of shift gears here a little bit in the second hour and get into some new stuff. You put up a great article a while back here, Suzanne, about basically MIT neuroscientists basically are working now on creating fake implants, memories, that is, into the brain. So far, they've been working with mice, and they're looking at going forward, testing this in humans. And this is actually something that's been ongoing for a long time. We followed this all the way back in, must have been 2003, and it's going on before that as well. But they're trying to isolate, basically, post-traumatic stress to try to get rid of so-called bad memories. And this is just the latest incarnation of this. So tell us about what you know about this development, Suzanne.
Well, absolutely right. PTSD is the reason why. That's the cover story. Because what happens is the soldiers do things. A lot of times when you're in the armed forces, you receive shots or medication. You're not told what it is. You're a government issue. That's why they call it GI. And you have no say in the matter. And so a lot of veterans come back, and if they are given a drug to induce the kind of like a mask or cover over what they've done in the moment, the scientists have not been able to come up with a way to detach emotion from memory. And so those memories then reconnect in the neural net. And that's why we get flashbacks, or soldiers or veterans get flashbacks. And for some of them, it's too egregious what they did while they were on the battlefield. And we're having suicides at 24 a day, I think, last time I looked. Mm-hmm. Homicides and suicides are rising because they don't get the treatment that they deserve when they come out. The Veterans Affairs Department is basically just like a huge drug dealer. And now that they're under the control of the Department of Defense, under an executive order that Obama signed late last year, all of the medical help that soldiers can get when they come out and they are when they become veterans and they're out in civilian life is almost non-existent unless they are exemplary to the cause of stifling their ability to function in society. And I know that might sound counterproductive, but they've been demonizing veterans for a very long time. In part, I think that this has to do with the military tactical operations as they're paramilitarizing the police. The veterans also have been trained in military tactical operations, and they can paramilitarize all the men on their block. So you might have a conflict there. Now, what's interesting with this is they've since prior to this discovery, they've been trying to use combinations of drugs and vaccines and psychotropic pills in order to get people to forget what they're doing while they're doing it.
Yeah.
Well, now they can just literally erase the memory, implant something else, and you don't know the difference, and neither does your brain, because your brain literally can't tell the difference between dream and reality. And so they've been able to use optical fiber light apparatus to implant into the rat's brain and implant a memory, and the rat responds correctly to that memory, that fake memory, as if it actually happened.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I mean, first of all, post-traumatic stress is a natural human response to the horrible things that they've either seen or in this case done, if we're talking about military. And I personally think it's despicable that they're turning these soldiers into basically a robot army, reprogrammable, if you will, so that no consequence whatsoever will be taken by, you know, or will be felt by the actions that they've taken. They do something so despicable that they cannot live with it and do that under orders, of course, but then basically their memories are swiped and, you know, it just out comes the sun and the butterflies are flying again, everything is good, you know? And so why shouldn't... I think there's something deeper, I mean, going on here, Suzanne, because I think that they... as you say, they wrap this in PTS, post-traumatic stress, as the main issue, and they take usually very, very emotional cases when they talk about this. For instance, when it's covered on 60 Minutes or something like that, they talk about this horrible situation that someone had, and oh, thank God that they got helped by this thing. But the bigger picture and the more dangerous aspect of this is that, you know, people who are not serving or people who just basically have the slightest little emotional issue can basically, you know, if this technology now goes through, basically could get their mind swiped and everything erased. It speaks to something much more deeper and problematic in us, where we are so incapable of handling the slightest uncomfort when it comes to stress. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Absolutely. This is Total Recall. This is it coming to life. Now, the implications later on, is this going to stick? Because obviously when they use drugs and vaccines, it doesn't stick. Will the neural net reconnect itself? Because it was an actual relationship. The thing about our brains, and that's why they have the brain mapping project that Obama said, oh, we need to know everything about the brain. I think it's interesting that the psychiatric community is so involved in the brain mapping project when we're being assigned all of these drugs that alter our neural net. And they're basically admitting that they have no idea what these drugs do to us because they have no idea how the brain works. But that's just a side note.
Great. Yeah, exactly. We have no idea whatsoever what we're doing. So let's try to monitor it while we're doing it to see how it changes us. Perfect.
Sure. Yeah, because everybody's a guinea pig. Who cares? You know, yeah. If you think about it, they want to kill off a bunch of us anyway. So if a couple of us don't make it through their experiments, it's not really a big deal to them anyway.
Yeah, no, it's all good.
Right. And now they are coming up with this MIT. It's successful. It is in rats. However, the rat DNA and human DNA is extremely close. And that's why they use rats and they use pigs when they're doing these experiments. And then it's a hop, skip and a jump from human to human trials. So here we go. You can have a situation where you are in the military. Or it's not just military. I mean, people who go through traumatic events are then labeled with post-traumatic stress disorder. And it's kind of like ADHD. It's a very, very popular diagnosis because they can just say, oh, well, you have post-traumatic stress disorder. That's it. You have post-traumatic stress. You can't handle the stress. You can't let go of whatever happened to you and here's some drugs.
Yeah.
But with ADHD, which is also very popular, they've got... They're working with EEG in order to find somewhere in the brain where ADHD resides, because the man who founded the disease on his deathbed just admitted that it was fictitious, that it was designed in order to sell Ritalin, and that it never existed. So now they're going to go back into the brain and radiate a bunch of children doing these experiments, trying to find where ADHD resides in the neural net. And this, the implications for this is staggering, because right now we have people who are mind controlled and they program people and they brainwash and then they perform these egregious acts and they can't remember doing them. There was the nanny in New York who allegedly stabbed two children that were in her care to death in a bathtub, and she has no memory of this. Sirhan has no memory. James Holmes has no memory of what he did.
Yeah.
Now they don't have to, you know, with these people, they were probably injected with something combined with programming. Like in the case with the nanny, she all of a sudden started going to a psychiatrist 3 weeks before she committed this crime.
Yeah.
Very convenient.
Hmm.
James Holmes was going to a Air Force psychiatrist. Very convenient. Now they don't have to go through any of that. If this works, they could effectively shine a light and create, get you to do something and then shine this light. It's effectively like, what is that movie? Men in Black. When they want to erase.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And then you've committed the act. They shine the light on you, and then you have no memory of it. You literally have a new memory. So if you were to go under any kind of testing, you would pass. You know, like a lie detector test, you would pass, because a lie detector test only detects whether or not you're lying. But if you believe the lie, then you pass it.
Yeah, that's right. So reality is in limbo here. Not that we don't have, you know, enough problem with that when we go deep into philosophy, but in this case, it makes the situation even worse, because what if this is a technology being developed on a mass scale, let's say? I mean, okay, right now we're talking about something that's probably fairly invasive, I think. Wait a minute. It was administered with a virus, correct? Part of this technology.
Oh, yes, they do have viruses that will attack your neural net and they eat away at it. And what they did with this is they used in combination with a virus to rework the neural DNA structure inside your neural net.
So that means it's fairly easy if it was to be mass basically administered. That's what I'm getting at. Go ahead, Susan.
Oh yeah, like let's say there was a disaster and they 20,000 people were affected by this, and they don't want them to remember what they saw. They could, you know, theoretically they could spray something, crop dust them, and everyone would breathe it in. The nanoparticles would get into their, it would pass the blood-brain barrier, and they would forget, and they would be implanted with a new memory.
And the elite would be our friends, and we'd be all living in paradise, and we'd love to be under servitude, you know, the regular stuff, right?
right. And then us becoming, you know, for a visual, you know, that scene in The Matrix where Morpheus is talking to Neo and he holds up the battery. That's effectively, how are you going to change people? How are you going to get rid of the human spirit? Here you go.
Yeah.
Because if you can implant new memories into people, then they don't have the want or desire anymore to be independent, to be free, to think for themselves. It's not a question of social engineering that they've been using. We were talking about in the first half. Now they can just take away our humanity and our want for independence implanting new memories.
Social engineering. That's Stone Age, you know. Let's move on. Let's move forward here and really get to the good stuff, you know. Oh my God. Yeah. Well,
I have people talk to me a lot about the RFID chip. And mm-hmm. eventually it's coming. They're all going to stick us with the RFID chip. And I have to remind people that they're past the RFID chip. They've got neural dust that they can blow in your face and it will attach itself to the tissue in your brain. And you can be controlled that way. The idea that they're going to inject a chip into our body, that's what they had in the 80s, and that was cool. And in the 90s, people were being chipped. They are so far beyond that right now that it's child's play.
I believe you're right. Yeah, I think so as well. It seems very counterproductive to do it that way, unless they really are going for that psychological impact that you should know that you are chipped and you should feel it. You see what I mean? There's like, there might be that level to it, but when it comes to nanotechnology, these are, even a grain of rice, it's like, it's huge compared to what they have these days.
Absolutely. And I agree with you for the effect. Absolutely. If you want to, that's what people do with kids. You know, what was funny is I was watching some documentaries on Common Core. And the way, even the idea of timeout or the idea of, you know, bringing a child into the room and showing them what they've done and reprimanding them or punishing them, or even if you spank your child, all of these things, ideas originate in control structures of teaching children that will then become adults from a very early age that, if you don't follow, if you don't do what you're told, this is going to happen to you. So since we're already kind of programmed like infants and we act like, you know, toddlers.
Oh, yeah.
It would be very effective, like you mentioned, to in front of a group of, you know, 20 people to grab one of them and inject them with this and say, see, this is what's going to happen to you if you don't comply.
Yeah. I mean, erasing memories that basically we could be looking at a situation where it's decided that something that has been traumatic enough is to be, you know, taken out of people's memories. Let's say something like, even like 9/11, let's say, that this is, or how it probably is going to turn out though, is that people are probably going to volunteer to get this done with. You're going to have the psychologists on the TV talking about how detrimental this is and it really needs to be taken care of. And instead of getting a flu shot, you go get the mind swipe pretty much, and these things are gone. But the problem here, the danger here, is that sure, there might be situations where there are individuals that have experienced something that is so horrifying against their will, and they basically can't, you know, continue their life or whatever. But and that's another case, you know, that's a different thing in this case. But when we no longer are willing to work through the trauma ourselves, to try to work through it, to try to learn from it and grow from it, to try to bring it into our core and try to understand it, or even why it happened to us. I think that all of these things are very, very valuable to us as human beings, despite them being painful. But this is just the way it is, I think. I think that, again, we would do ourselves a tremendous disservice by completely padding our complete, you know, reality and our experiences here, where nothing at all is going to ever be stressful for you, or you're not going to feel bad, you're not going to feel down. There's going to be pills for it, or different kinds of medications administered for it. I think it's horrible. It's pointing to something much more deeper and problematic, even why we're in the process of developing these technologies. Suzanne, what do you think?
You hit the nail right on the head. Absolutely. What creates us is our, it's just like our immune system, okay? In order to develop the ability for your immune system to fight off disease, you have to get sick. Injecting vaccines into an infant all the way up to 2 years of age, up to 65 vaccines, which means that they will have no immune system. They will no longer be able to fight off any disease. They could be susceptible to anything, and the common cold could kill them. Eventually, that's where it's headed.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's the same thing with our memories. What we go through and what we overcome, or what we don't overcome, helps create who we are, and it builds our character, and it builds our personality, and it builds our stamina. And if you take that away, you are goo. Think of it in terms of your microwave. You put the piece of chicken into the microwave and turn on the microwave. Molecularly speaking, that piece of chicken that looks like a piece of chicken, it didn't change in structure on the macro level, but on the micro level, on the molecular level, it's just goo. It's just slimy, yucky goo. There's nothing nutritious about it at all. You've destroyed that. But on the outside, it still looks like a piece of chicken. And that's what would happen. Those are the implications of something like this, where they can implant false memories, where they say they'll take away the pain, like with the internal sunshine of the spotless mind. Sure. But the pain is what makes us who we are, because we choose to overcome it, or we choose to succumb to it. There are many people who spend decades of their lives living in depression and blaming other people, but eventually something snaps and we get up out of the mire and pick ourselves up and dust ourselves off and get going. That is our humanity. This would remove our humanity.
Yeah, yeah. It's like we would create tremendously, well, weak people in that regard. We wouldn't be capable of handling anything that would be slightly stressful to us, because we would, and okay, I'm exaggerating, I'm you know, projecting this far out into the future if this goes ahead, but I think that that's where it's heading. It's kind of like that world in, Demolition Man or whatever, when you know, he gets frozen at one point in history, and then he wakes up where everyone is basically completely, you know, it's basically a Brave New World Order right there, and he's just shocked at how strange people and humans have become, and they don't engage in anything that's real anymore. And that's what I'm seeing when I'm projecting this forward. If these things go ahead with combinations of technologies that are to protect us from, you know, everything that's so absurd about, like, you know, for example, falling over or driving our car for us, because, you know, it although these things are meant for being helpful, it actually is doing us a disservice at the end of the day, because we will not be able to, you know, handle anything ourselves, basically. And it's tremendously dangerous, because if those systems fail, or if anything else happens along the way, everything will fail, and people won't be able to know how to, you know, wipe themselves. Sorry, but you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. The social engineering has been in place for a very long time. They've been working with parents for a very long time. It started in the 70s with Dr. Spock, and all of a sudden, kids are being hurt by having to do chores or having responsibilities at young ages. And let the kid be a kid. Let them play. They've got, you know, they've only got 18 years to be a kid. They got the rest of their life to be responsible. Just let them have a good time. Who cares if they don't, you know, don't let the kid fall. Oh my God, yeah. You might get hurt.
Yeah.
All of these things create adults that are inept and incapable. And if they get a scratch, they scream and cry. And it's not pretty when a 35-year-old tantrums.
Well, exactly. There you go. Well, this is the plan, I think, to turn everyone into, you know, grown-ups, giant toddlers, as you said, walking around with a big body and a little spirit or a little soul and a brain in there. But it's I read this really good article that argued, for example, against those who tried to take away bullying in school. And at first I was like, wait a minute, but then I was reading the article and, you know, it suddenly made sense to me that the bully and the one who's being bullied they enter into a relationship, and that basically the article talked about how important, and no parent, you know, want to see that happen. You know, no one will, you know, that it's understandable, but at the same time, the article expressed this concern over the fact that if bullies are taken out to the extent that they are basically that this play is not allowed to happen naturally in a school or whatever, that you will also remove the sense of achievement and accomplishment and self-esteem building experience that it is for a child who, let's say, was bullied to overcome the bully, and also at the same time having the bully being said, you know, put in his place or whatever. It's a difficult thing, but I'm sure you know what I'm getting at, Suzanne, that it's a natural thing how things have occurred, and it is through that motion that we, you know, we learn to become who we are, we identify with what we're capable of, and all of these self-esteeming building experiences are basically slowly being taken away. And when we do that, we end up with a very weak individual that's basically not capable of doing anything. And that's why everyone runs around and you know, sues everybody for being, you know, emotionally hurt or whatever. It's turning into something completely ridiculous.
Absolutely. I have two small children. My son is older than our daughter by 4 years. I have a younger sibling and my husband is an only child. This is very interesting because when his little girl gets her toy taken away from her big brother, my husband goes into yell and grab the toy and give it back to the little girl. I never do, because fighting with my brother gave me character and gave my brother character. And we gave each other thick skins, and we taught each other that sometimes people do things that are unfair and that's okay. And sometimes you ignore it and you go and play somewhere else. And sometimes you stand up and say, no, that's my toy and I want it back. And sometimes you go and get the authority figure to help you out. But if you are not given any of those options and you are not taught to stand up and make a decision for yourself, like you were just saying, we are bigger and we're older, but mentally we're no different than we were as children. And it's a lot easier to control a 2-year-old or a 7-year-old than it is to control a 35-year-old or a 65-year-old, because they have less reference point when it comes to consequences.
Yeah,
my children only have a few years. I've got 36 years worth of consequences. So I can make a decision based on a broad range of possibilities. They've only got a few. So they look up at me and say, is it okay if I do this? Am I going to kill myself? Am I going to get hurt? How hurt am I going to get? What's the consequence? Is my toy going to break? Am I going to get a new one? They have no point of reference. Creating a society of people who are in that mentality for the rest of their life. Yeah, that's really bad.
Yeah, I know. Well, this article was saying, I'm just going to read two paragraphs here. Earth is simply not a utopian planet, and likely it will not be anytime in the near future. Humanity is riddled with intolerance, disagreement, and yes, dirty looks are part of human culture. We are getting there, but most of us are not yet in spiritual unity, having the utmost compassion for others. And says, would you like to empower children with the wisdom to be responsible for their own actions based on solid moral principles and empathy? Or would you prefer teaching all kids to fit into a behavioral template and abide by certain rules to create a completely safe utopian environment in which everyone is always nice to each other by default, without moral responsibility and the wisdom to know the difference? You can't have both. So, you know, that's where we're heading at. And I think that although we have although that many of these rules and regulations and politically correct things that we come up in and come up with in these times, although that they might stem from a point of view of good intentions, I think that we're doing again ourselves a tremendous disservice, and I think that these things down the line will have an impact on our children who's going to grow up, and generations from now, we are transmorphing them psychologically into something that we have no control over whatsoever.
I agree with you. We're already seeing effects of this. What our parents came out of the culture of, you know, children are part of the family, and so they do chores and they help out. If you lived on a farm, you had responsibilities. You have to get up in the morning and milk that cow at the right time. You have to feed the chickens at the right time. You have to take care of the plants at the right time. And even 2 and 3 year olds were helping do this. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not labor. It's not for, you know, they're not in a factory building a shoe, you know, on an assembly line. They're helping.
It's survival. That's what it's called.
Absolutely. And it's who we all we're supposed to want to show up to work on time. How are you going to get people to show up at work on time if they have no sense of responsibility?
Yeah.
So by having chores, I had chores in order to earn my allowance. I didn't just get money once a week. I had to earn it. I had to do a certain amount of things. If I didn't, money was deducted from how much I would get at the end of the week. So it was in my best interest to get all of my chores done correctly. And it wasn't just getting the work done. It was getting it done correctly because what I did in the house affected everybody else's ability to function in the house. Getting children to understand this concept, there's nothing wrong with that. There's a time to work and a time to play. And it's not training children to be slaves in a workforce. It's training people to understand that we all live together. And here I go again with this communitarianism. We all live together and we all affect each other. We don't live in a bubble. And no man is an island. So yeah. What I do affects my neighbors. What my neighbors do affect me. What my community does affects communities next door. And if we want to be able to work together and have common goals and common interests, we have to be able to be responsible to each other, respectful of each other, but also to be able to stand up for each other and to stand up against things that think about nobody standing up, you know, and that's the part that shocks me. Very few people, I want to preface that, I correct my statement, very few people are standing up against the system all over the globe. Most of the manufactured resistances that we see are the most effective, but the actual grassroots ones, not so much, because this is generational training of people. Now, with this technique, they don't have to worry about all the propaganda and all the money it costs to train teachers to propagandize to the students and Common Core and training them from a very early age to behave this way. Now, they can just shine a light and there you go. You're no longer an independent person who can function on their own. You are completely dependent because you don't remember ever being otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where they want it to be. It's, these aspects, I guess from their point of view is basically taking, you know, the law into your own hands, and you can't have that. You know, you can't have people who are, well, basically just to go back what you talked about as well, in terms of communitarianism and all that, the bottom line there is that people should be able to choose that for themselves of how they want to live and with whom they want to live and according to what rules, as long as it doesn't hurt, you know, anyone else. But what we're talking about is a system that is about enforcing their will upon you, and that you at the end of the day don't have that choice to make for yourself. And it's gotten so much worse since the kids have been, you know, handed over to the state pretty much and educated by them on their terms. And people are not questioning this. I'm amazed at how many parents are just freely leaving their kids with the state and not questioning who are these teachers, what the quality of the of what they're being, you know, taught and everything else. And, you know, some do, but, you know, as you say, in comparison, it's very, very few that are actually thinking that through and asking those questions.
Right. When my son got to be about 5 and we were going to put him in preschool, and I started looking at the curriculum, and I had been teaching my son since he was born, you know, different languages, how to read, how to spell, inputting information. We lived on a farm at the time when he was very young. So he was taking care of the chickens and helping out with planting the crops, because this was a commercial farm. And my son had the idea of responsibility. So when I looked at the curriculum and I realized that they took out phonics and they took out civics and they took out anything other than memorization, which you have no emotional attachment to. And so it doesn't become part of you. It just becomes a trivia little tidbit that you rattle off in the middle of a conversation to make yourself sound good. I said, no, there's no education involved here. I'm going to continue to teach him. My daughter, by proxy, just because she's in the room, learns as well. I've went out and bought her some preschool. She's 2.5. She's going to be 3 in December. But I went out and bought her some preschool coloring books. And so when I sit down with my son and teach him, she's sitting down at the table doing it too. You know, she doesn't understand everything that's going on, but she's getting some information by proxy, and she's displaying tremendous ability for sentence structure at 2.5. That she shocks me. That she pulls out 50-cent words at 2.5. I'm like, where did you get that? But because she's always constantly around us and part of this, so she's getting the benefit. Now, they'll tell you, kids in the neighborhood, my son is already learning pre-algebra and some calculus concepts and physics concepts, so that when we get to the actual equations, he'll be able to grasp the concept and be able to perform, follow through the equations all the way to the end and get the right answer. But his friends in the neighborhood, they've never heard of multiplication tables. They don't know what algebra is. They're in Common Core, they say, you're going to learn this at this prescribed time in the way that we're going to teach it to you, and to expose you to an idea before we've decided that you're able to handle it is not conducive to the big picture, which would be the huge education that we're trying to give you. But actually, that's not how people learn. People learn through trying out, trial and error. They learn through gaining knowledge of consequence, through gaining concepts and trying them out. Anyone who's had children know that children go through phases when they're little where, like, let's say for the first 2 months, they are listening to everything. And then they go through this phase where they're trying everything out. And then they'll go back and they'll start listening. And so children go through, that's what we call the terrible twos. And that's what all these different times when they are rebellious against us, it's really because they've been gathering information for the last couple of months. And now they're going to try it out. They're trial and error. They're going to see whether or not their hypothesis works as far as the authority in the house or where their boundaries lie and what they're able to do and get away with and what's okay and what's not. That is evidence of how children learn. They gather information and then they try it out. And they gather information and then they try it out. And they do it throughout their entire life. And I would go as far as to say we continue that process on into our adulthood, where we gather information and try it out and gather information and try it out. So the idea that you can structure every single person individual as a collective instead of individuals and totally take out the idea of how we actually learn and how our thought process works, and then if it doesn't work out in their favor, just go ahead and implant something new so that you're going to comply with their system.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, and this is it's not an exact example, but I wrote an article about Staff Sergeant Robert Bales, I'm sorry, in Afghanistan, who shot 16 civilian Afghanis, women and children. And he just went on a rampage, a homicidal rampage. Now, this gentleman was in the armed forces. He was given mefloquin, which is a drug to treat malaria. He was given it not because he had malaria. It was a pre-treatment, so he wouldn't get malaria. However, and what was interesting, before I go into the however part, the Food and Drug Administration, as well as the VA, are now saying that because Sergeant Bales did this act and they have said that he has TBI, which is traumatic brain injury. Now, they're giving out these huge warnings about traumatic brain injury. And basically, if you got hit in the head too many times, you're going to become homicidal, is what they're saying. But that's not true. Actually, people who have TBI do not become homicidal. When you look at the statistics, they don't act out. It's a very, very small portion of people who actually act out, and people who actually kill people or harm others, the number gets even smaller. It's not even worth mentioning. But what is worth mentioning is that this drug, in the warnings from the manufacturer, it states that this drug may cause psychiatric symptoms in a number of patients ranging from anxiety, paranoia, depression, hallucination, and psychotic behavior. And if on any occasion the patient displays any, whether grand or small, of anxiety, paranoia, depression, any of these symptoms, that they are immediately supposed to be taken off the drug, because it will what the drug does is it enhances your propensities. And anyone who had a history of their family of psychotic behavior is never prescribed this drug. So essentially what Sergeant Bales had was, he must have had a propensity toward psychotic behavior, or somebody in his family was schizophrenic or had major depression, which this drug then heightened his natural propensity, and he had a homicidal moment where he killed people. But he's going to jail for 20 years, and now they're going to start working on drugs to combat TBI.
Yeah. Well, it's very similar to what we've seen behind SSRIs. You know, certain kids, they, in some cases, they just kill themselves. In some regards, they kill their own parents. Or they run amok in a school somewhere, and it's very similar. And yeah, is it by design, or what's going on here?
Well, what's interesting to me was this was right in your face. Like, we always, it's a lot of times we pick up on things after the fact. After they brought down the buildings, then we figured out that not only was this all a hoax, but the buildings actually like dustified. There isn't even enough rubble to account for all the floors that fell down. But here, this is right happening right now in your face. Now, the government and the Food and Drug Administration are completely ignoring the fact that this is a side effect. He actually, from a technical standpoint, he had an adverse reaction to the drug. The adverse reaction to the drug happens to be that it causes you to be homicidal. Okay. Now, most drugs, when you have an adverse reaction, it's usually like a rash or diarrhea or something where people don't die.
Yeah.
But this drug happens to be an adverse reaction, is you're going to become homicidal or suicidal or both. So they immediately, I mean, I can't stress that enough. It, in everything that I researched, people were taken off the drug within seconds. When they called their doctor and said that they were experiencing, the doctor said, stop taking the drug right now and throw it out. Do not take any more drugs. We will put you on a replacement. You know, we'll call it into the pharmacy within an hour. That's how serious it is. And pharmacists, I'm sorry, and doctors are told to look for the full spectrum history of this person, not just their mental background, but the background of their family. What do they have propensities toward? Because we don't always act on what is in our genetics.
Yeah,
we might not have a need to. You know, you might have homicidal maniacs in your family, but you personally have never been in a situation where you have to use that part of your genetic makeup. So this drug will enhance that, bring it out in you. And it, and for the armed forces to hand our soldiers these kinds of drugs, we all know that they do. Here's an instance where they actually did it, and it's happening right now. This man was just sentenced to 20 years in prison. Nobody else got any prison time. Nobody else is being blamed. The guy who gave him the pill, we don't even know what his name is.
Yeah. Well, Suzanne, they're testing it, I think, to check the symptoms, but maybe it's designed to produce aggression and violence. One of the problems that the U.S. military has had since the Vietnam War, at least openly talking about, is that the personnel have a tendency not to want to fire on the enemy. This is, like, you know, known. And the fabled Jacob's Ladder that they made the movie out of with the same was the development of such a drug that would produce immense aggression and violence, so that they would, you know, wreak havoc on the enemy pretty much. This would be to something that comes in chemically that is lacking for the incentive that the soldier has overall. I mean, the soldiers, like, they might not even care, you know what country they're in or care about what they're there for. And so why would they be have any kind of tendency of wanting to kill the enemy, if you see what I'm getting at? So what they've been struggling with is to find something that will come in this place, if you will, to try to make them more, you know, active in terms of how, what they can do when it comes to the killing and everything. So if you look at it, it might be a two-pronged situation here, where they on one end then want to create a drug that will produce immense aggression and violence, And then after that fact, when that's done, and maybe the soldier then suffers from PTS or something like that, they come in with this other thing that we talked about, either administered through a vaccine or basically optics. They take away that memory, and then they're back to zero again, back to square one. And then they're ready to be engaged in the next theater, in the next battle, what have you. I mean, it would be, this would basically be a robot, but it would be with human flesh, if you see what I'm getting at.
Yes, absolutely. And at the same time, they're building Atlas. DARPA has this challenge. They're building disaster robots. You know, don't worry about it. The robots will come in during a hurricane or during a tornado or an earthquake and save you instead of, you know, ripping your head off. But absolutely not. No, this is an apparatus. So while they're preparing and they're perfecting the technology in order to get these Terminator robots out and available, since, you know, they've had this idea and they've been working for many, many decades. They've also, on the other hand, been trying to drug-induced soldiers to lack empathy, enhance psychopathic behavior. They've been doing a lot of studies. I just wrote an article about psychopaths because they found that psychopaths can turn off and on their empathy. So now they're interested in how they do that, how they can create a situation where they can maybe induce someone to turn off their empathy, create a psychopath, maybe just for a brief moment to get a function performed and then turn the switch back on. All of these things tie together. You tied it in very absolutely beautifully, because it's not just one. It's on several fronts that they're doing this, because while they've got this one thing going on, they still have wars going on. They still have false flags to commit. They still have social programming to bring out into the open. So they have to have multiple fronts with this going on. And eventually, like we were talking about earlier, it's going to get to the point where it's not these specialized areas where they're using this, but it's on everyone that they're using this. Because if they're going to have a group of us around, killing off most of us, but keeping a small portion of us around, they have to make sure that there's going to be no rebellion. And everything that we've been talking about in the second half of the broadcast is about dehumanizing us so that in the future there would be no rebellion. That concept would just not exist.
Yeah, yeah. Well, imagine how they will be able to regulate and control reality, I mean, completely from that point. And, I mean, you mentioned it, the neuralizer from Men in Black. That's what we're looking at. And you could have one individual performing a task of basically eradicating another few humans, and then you basically go in with a neuralizer and you take away the event, and it's like it's never happened. It's like Dark City. I'm making all these movie analogies here, but the fact is that that's where it's going. This is like sci-fi coming real, and in Dark City, that, you know, you have the same thing. People fall into a deep slumber, asleep, and they rearrange the whole their universe, if you will, their little world. It's just a little city, but they rearrange it in such a way, to be able to study you and see, you know, how you behave or what you are, how, if you turn out differently and all these things. It's like a lab, you know. It's like we're lab mice or something like that. It's really creepy.
It is really creepy. Absolutely. And then, people ask, why are people not fighting back? Well, because they've been socially engineered not to. We've got drugs that suppress our ability, and they're working on further drugs to suppress our ability and technology that will keep us from fighting back. So we are stymied and stifled in so many different ways. It's shocking to me that anybody's fighting back.
Yeah, it's true. It's already kind of a mind swipe, if you think of it, with everything that's going on and just the level that where regular people's memory is at. It's pretty bad state, and very few actually have what I see is like a coherent, pieced together version of reality. It's like they're being, you know, bounced off one thing and the other, and they're not really even there anymore. So that's, I mean, it's bad enough already, but with this technology, it might be a complete, completely defunct situation. But the issue here, though, that we can go back to, Suzanne, I think, is the effectiveness of these things overall. First of all, on everyone is different, and I think there never will be a one size fits all for everyone. There's always people who will fall through the cracks, but nonetheless, there's this idea that you mentioned before that although they might do it and it works temporarily, it's still something that comes back. It kind of like GMO or whatever, that you actually, this is something you have to keep doing You have to keep manipulating it or modifying it for it to work. Otherwise, it just snaps back to its original setting, if you will, the original creation of a seed. And the same might be for memories that are created, that, okay, they're formed in the brain and everything else, and they're in its, you know, it has to do with neurons and in certain pattern and everything else. But bottom line is, we still do not understand the brain, as you said before. We don't understand where the soul fits into this, the human spirit, where memories really are stored, etc. There's a number of different variables here that could just completely upset this equation of what they're trying to do. And I'm hoping for these kinds of things to come into the picture, that whatever they're seeking to do when it comes to manipulation, it actually will not work at the end of the day. And they fully, because they also are working from an incomplete science, as I see it. They don't incorporate, for example, things like the soul, right? That doesn't exist, so let's not even look at that. It's all in the brain, and that's it. And that's why I think they're going to fail with this too. What do you think?
I absolutely agree with you, because what's interesting to me is I was just having this conversation with a friend of mine, and we were talking about Christianity. And what's interesting to me with Christianity is the Council of Nicaea takes all of the books that don't enslave you. I'm sorry. I apologize if I offend people. But what is in the Apocrypha is all about self-realization, self-empowerment, the connection, the direct connection between you and God. There is no intermediary, because you are an aspect of God. You are an incarnation of God experiencing itself. And this is rampant throughout the Apocrypha, in the Gospel of Thomas, in the Gnostic text, in the Gospel of Judas, in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. And so all of that was taken out and ignored and forgotten. And all of the aspects of religion that facilitate enslavement on any level, whether it's enslavement to the guy in front of you or enslavement to the ideology of the creator that you have, it's still enslavement. It's still a slave mentality. And it still works. If you enslave yourself to an ideology, then you're going to enslave yourself to the guy in front of you, and vice versa. But the idea that we are aspects of creation, that the way in which this universe works is about manifestation and our ability to focus and create, and that we have the ability to focus and create, and that's how this whole thing works, was taken out of ideology. And I think that that's extremely interesting, because that is the ultimate, for me, the ultimate empowerment. And that's where they get it wrong, like you were saying. That's where they're using the incomplete science. Because when it comes down to it, in my own personal life, whenever I've ever really, really, really wanted something, I always get it. I don't know how that is, except when I study law of attraction and quantum physics. Then it starts to make sense. Because when I focus my attention on something, it manifests.
Yeah,
it always does. It's always been, whether person, place, or thing, I've always gotten it. I would really want to date that guy and look at him and think about him in my little teenager mind. And then all of a sudden he'd call me on the phone and want to go out on a date, and he would be my boyfriend for a year. And I would really look at this job, and it was making a lot of more money, and I would picture myself, and I didn't even know what I was doing at the time. I didn't know about quantum physics back then. I was a teenager and an early adult in my 20s, but I would imagine what it was like to work in this office. And then I would go in and I would get the job on the first interview. Before the interview was over, they were handing me the job. And when I got older and I learned about quantum physics and manifestation, I went back to studying. I started studying religions and religious texts when I was about 12 years old. And I went back to the Apocrypha and I started looking in, and I'm like, wait a minute, they're saying this then, and this was outlawed. Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah.
Because if we really knew who we are, you know, like David Icke says, if we really knew who we are and how powerful we really are and how much in control of what's going on here we really are, we could stop it instantly. Instantly, we could stop all of this.
Very well put. Well, exactly. Self-preservation in combination with being just self-driven with a vision and a will. I mean, there's nothing like a powerful intention, just as I say, to manifest what you want, to get what you want and what is needed. That's usually also why times of desperation, if you will, and now we're back to that point again, times when things are really rough and tough, and when you've gone through something really difficult, that you manage to stand up on your legs and take yourself out of that situation. And again, that's why those types of experiences is not what is needed or wanted this time, because that will create self-driven, confident human beings with a lot of self-esteem that knows how to do stuff and get things done and change things. And you know, that's not the path towards creating dependency on people. So I think it's very explanatory of why they've been doing it this way. And I couldn't agree with you more that they've done it and a fantastic job with the church, with Christianity, and you know, there are tons of all the other religions out there as well to that causes the same type of enslavement to a system that basically makes you subservient to it, as opposed to, you know, identifying with yourself. So yeah, this is how they've done it, and people just, they have to wake up to it and learn the history, what we've gone through, and just start reversing this process.
Absolutely. And that's why, for me personally, non-compliance is the only way to go. It's very difficult to argue with someone who doesn't argue back. If they're going to stand their ground and they're just going to refuse to argue back, I can't fight with them.
Yeah.
And if nothing I can do can provoke a response, then nothing I can do can provoke a response. And they feed off of our responses, because they know then what the temperament of the society is, or the structure. And so they know how to better come back next time with more propaganda or different propaganda, or shift the social consciousness another way, because we are responding. We're giving away our intentions to them every time we react. But if we stop reacting and we say, okay, fine, you know what, global elite, go ahead, whatever. Do that over there in that sandbox. We're going to be over here building our communities, and who cares if we don't have your electricity? We'll figure that out. We've got smart people. We've got garage door scientists over here. We can figure that out. In fact, there's free energy. It's been available to us for decades. We know about it. We've got some of the blueprints. We'll be fine. We know how to grow our own food. We know how to get along. We know how to teach each other how to build houses and educate our children. You just go ahead and do that over there. Eventually, they're not going to have any power. The more people go and play in our sandbox, the less people go play their sandbox. And that will be this huge shift. And if it could be global, then it wouldn't matter what they're doing, because they're not getting the participation that they so desperately need. If we don't care about the fiat currency, and we literally say, you know what, I'm not going to use this anymore. If a whole community said, I'm not going to use this anymore, we're going to use something else. And I know it's radical, and it's hard to detach, especially when it comes to finances, to detach from the system. But if people were brave enough to actually go ahead and do it, it might set a precedent for other communities. It might leak out and radiate out into countries, and whole countries might get brave enough to go ahead and do that and bring manufacturing back to their country, so that they're not dependent on other countries who are not participating in this, or participating with countries. You know what I mean? It could radiate out and become this whole big thing where the global elite would become obsolete.
Yeah. Well, exactly. You lead by example and do what you do. And I think there are. I think isolated examples of people doing it, but one, they're not maybe as vocal, and two, these are of course not stories that are being picked up by any kind of media at all, because one, they might not know about it, and two, they know that they don't want to address this because it would do just what you're talking about. It would have this radiating effect, and therefore I'm just hoping that this kind of natural, from the bottom up, if you will, kind of effect will happen, where people just do what they know is right, and they also just trust it that, you know, or frankly they don't give a shit if others do it or not, but the fact, you know, they do it because they want to do it and they know that it's right. And because otherwise you have a situation where everyone's just sitting around waiting for everyone else to do something, and then it doesn't happen. Do you see what I mean?
Absolutely. And that's where we are right now. We're waiting. We've got rock stars in every genre and every industry, and we do what they tell them to. You know, I have my readers come to me all the time, and they want predictions and they want information about what they should do. And I don't know. I don't know. But I know that your self-preservation and your family's self-preservation, and then radiating out from that, your immediate family and your community self-preservation, that is very important, regardless of what's going on. Make sure that that's taken care of. And if nothing happens, nothing happens. If martial law isn't declared, then it isn't declared. But you still have enough in your house to take care of whatever happens. You know what I mean? And we should get into that mindset of taking care of ourselves, as opposed to we should, I guess what I'm saying is we should start going back to being the ants and not the grasshopper.
All right, let's do it. No, it sounds good. Thank you, Susan. I think we should begin to wrap things up with this time. It's been good having you back and continuing our conversation from last time, and we should touch base again and do it at some point. I think at that time as well, because we had another topic lingering in the wings here, which was a little bit more on, the connection to the larger connection to what happened to Michael Hastings and the controlled cars and everything else. But that's something we can save for next time, because it's a big topic and we did our own video on it as well. And there's a lot of things to say about it. And there's been new video coming out consequently about that. So maybe that's something for next time, Susan, because it's an important and very interesting case, that one.
Oh, absolutely. I love coming on your show. You are one of the, I go on a lot of radio shows, but you are one of the few hosts that is just nice and wonderful to actually, I feel like I've known you. You know, you're just very warm and easy to talk to. And anytime you want me on the show, anytime at all, just please let me know. I will come on the show.
Thank you, Susan. We really appreciate that. Same with you as well. Now, why don't we give out your website here at the end again, so people know where to go to follow you on a more regular basis.
OccupyCorporatism.com. I post articles 6 days a week, and they are up-to-date news articles. I have my show, The Region 10 Report, on American Freedom Radio on Thursdays from 1 to 3 Pacific Time, 3 to 5 Central Time. The show can be listened to online at AmericanFreedomRadio.com, as well as download the app to your smartphone. Or I'm on terrestrial radio, 20 markets in the United States. I'm not exactly sure where, but there's a list on the website. And I also have Facebook and Twitter. You can sign up for my RSS feed. I have a newsletter, and you can email me at OccupyCorporatism@gmail.com. I really do answer every single email myself. It may not be in a timely fashion, I apologize, but I really do answer every question.
Oh, I know how that goes. There's not enough time in the day to answer all them. That's why. Yes. All right. Well, thank you for this time, Susan. Really appreciate it. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
We have some new and returning guests coming on next. Sonia Barrett and Sherry Edwards on the film The Business of Disease. David Icke will be with us, and so will Charles Eisenstein, Frater X, and Warren McLaughlin as well. Thank you so much for listening, for your membership, keeping our efforts moving forward and expanding, keeping us free from commercial interruptions and an ad-free website. Support those whom you believe in and want to encourage. That's the way to go. You guys rock. Take it easy, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.